Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, December the 12th. We are going to talk about those CIA tapes that showed the interrogation and waterboarding of two top terror suspects in 2002. The tapes were destroyed in 2005, reportedly to protect the identity of the interrogators. But we just learned about this last week. The news last week was met with bipartisan congressional anger from Joe Biden to John McCain. And this week, CIA Director Michael Hayden has been called before congressional committees to face closed-door questioning about the matter. As we heard in NPR News, he testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday and is back on Capitol Hill today to answer questions from a House panel also looking into the matter. We are going to talk about these tapes and who knew what when, at least what we know about who knew what when, and whether there ought to be a special counsel investigating this matter. And whether someone at the White House ordered the tapes be destroyed, or whether anyone in the White House approved the waterboarding, and whether it was okay or not for the CIA to have destroyed the tapes. Do you buy this to protect the identity of the interrogators' reason? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will wonder if you think this is a big deal or not, and what questions you have for our guest. He is Ed Terzansky, professor of political science at LaSalle University and senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, and he joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So help us understand this story a little bit more. The CIA apparently taped interrogators questioning two terror suspects back in 2002?
Well, it's actually three suspects. Two have been named.
Okay.
One is Abu Zubaydah, who was with bin Laden as his director of operations. The other is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who put together the attacks on 9/11. And those are the two who are named. There's a third who was not named. These interrogations took place in 2002. And this is the important part, Joy. Congress received no less than 30, that's 30, 30 briefings about what was happening, the kind of interrogation, and according to Porter Goss, who had been a member of the House Intelligence Committee, then went on to be CIA director from 2004 to 2006, he said the following, quote, among those being briefed, there was a pretty full understanding of what the CIA was doing, and the reaction in the room was not just approval, but encouragement, end quote. So here we are a year after, not quite a year after 9/11. Mm-hmm. We've caught the guy who put the plot together. We've caught bin Laden's operations chief, who was going through other plots. Now we're trying to stop other attacks. The CIA waterboards these two and a third that is not named. Members of Congress, among them Nancy Pelosi, are told about it. And not only don't they have a problem, they're enthusiastic. They say, get the information, stop the next attack. We do not want another 9/11.
Yeah, was this?
Now,
yeah.
2007. They're like Claude Rains and Casablanca, shocked to find gambling going on, shocked to find out that the CIA is doing this. And it really does show how the very serious work of trying to prevent terrorist attacks has fallen into a number of traps, but the largest one being politics. Mm-hmm. And people are trying to score points against this administration. And they're using the very important work of preventing terrorist attacks as a playground, if you will.
Now, when you say Congress was briefed, was this one of these situations where Nancy Pelosi and a select few other leaders were briefed?
That is exactly correct.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. Because it is so sensitive, you bring in the leadership of the relevant committees, And whoever else is within leadership, that is to say speaker, majority, minority whips, those kinds of individuals. On the Senate side, the majority and minority leader, and then the people from the relevant committees, you give them the briefing because this is very, very serious. And the CIA did a couple things at the time. First of all, they covered their political tracks by bringing these senior congressional leaders in, and then they went to the Department of Justice to get a memo. They said, look, are we on solid ground in doing this? The Department of Justice said, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, so why do you think, why did the CIA destroy these tapes then in 2005?
I think, first of all, Director General Michael Hayden has said that they were destroyed in order to protect the identities of the operatives doing the interrogation. I think that's partially the case. And this is very speculative on my part, so I want to mm-hmm. announce it as such. It's my belief that because of the way in which the political game is being played right now, and really the post 9/11 rules have been replaced by the post 9/11 rules or the pre-presidential election rules, and I think Hayden wants to protect his agency and his operatives because he has no faith that the political class will not use this, first of all, to try to get prosecutions of those operatives involved, and secondly, consider the number of leaks that have come out about very classified, serious, necessary counterterror operations. It's clear that there are opponents to this administration and to its policies who are going to endanger our people, our operatives, not just in terms of their livelihoods, but also their lives, by disclosing details of operations. And Hayden did not want to subject his agency or his operatives to either physical risk or legal risk.
Yeah. Does it make sense that President Bush wouldn't have known about these tapes or the destruction of these tapes until last week?
I don't know. I'll put it this way. I think the president was aware, certainly would have been told, not to any specific level of detail, but would have been told that we are using very vigorous methods to get information out and that we're using the most vigorous methods imaginable to make sure we get good information. But in a national security structure, I do not see somebody coming in and saying, now, Mr. President, by the way, we've got this on tape, mm-hmm. and then coming back and saying, listen, we're going to get rid of that tape we told you about a couple years ago. I don't see that happening. But certainly if the president, the president would have known that we were using very vigorous methods. And as any leader in a large organization, there are certain things that you just don't tell the person at the top because it's not prudent to get into that level of detail, and it's not necessary. It's just enough to say, we're doing what we have to make these guys talk, and let's not go beyond that. And I think that happens quite frequently, and I think it's always happened in each administration. Not just in government, incidentally. I think it happens in private industry as well.
Yeah. Talk of some, if you will, about this former CIA agent who is speaking out about this, John Kirku.
Kirku. I saw him interviewed mm-hmm. Yesterday, and he was very quick to advertise that he leans Democratic in his private politics and that he had not witnessed this, but had talked to someone who was part of it. And Kirku was his main thrust was to say, look, I wasn't there. I heard about it. I'm no fan of this administration. I lean the other side politically. But I got to tell you, we stopped many, many attacks. He said potentially dozens of attacks were disrupted because of the information they got specifically from Abu Zubaydah. So it's interesting that he came forward, and someone also put the question to me, well, why did the CIA disclose this? It's because the New York Times said, oh, by the by, we've got this information and we're going public with it. So the CIA made a virtue of necessity and mm-hmm. announced that the tapes had been destroyed. And Joe Biden became very exercised and said, we need a special prosecutor. John McCain, who, by virtue of what he experienced as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, who was unalterably opposed to anything outside the Geneva Conventions, even though these detainees fall outside of Geneva because they violate the four conditions that you have to satisfy in order to be covered by the conventions. You have to wear a uniform, rank insignia, go through an identifiable chain of command, carry your weapons in the open, and you may not target non-combatants. Well, Abu Zubaydah, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, just about all these al-Qaedas violate every part of that four-point test. So they're not covered by Geneva. So with all due respect to Senator McCain's moral convictions and his courage, set him aside. You've got these members of Congress running around wanting special prosecutors, as I said, largely for political reasons, although Jay Rockefeller has been interesting. Yeah. Jay Rockefeller has said, no, we don't need a special prosecutor. Let us have the briefing. Let us have the investigation on our own through the Intelligence Committee. And that's why General Hayden is back for a second day behind closed doors. And I must say, I would imagine that right now what's happening is an Oliver North moment. Mm-hmm. Remember during Iran-Contra, Congress could not wait to get Oliver North on the stand. Mm-hmm. And then Oliver North showed up in his uniform with his medals and pretty much beat members of Congress over the head with their own investigation. The public went squarely for North, and Congress was hoisted by its own petard. Yeah. And in this particular case, I think General Hayden, behind closed doors, is laying into these members of Congress saying, listen, do you want us to stop this threat? Do you want us to interdict these threats before they occur? And do you want us to have the tools to do it? And if you don't, by God, then have the courage to write the law where you specifically tell us what we can and cannot do. And I don't think either side wants to be put in that position. I think Congress wants to have its fun. It wants to engage in the mock outrage and the strum and drang. But behind closed doors, they realize this is very serious stuff, that Congress was on board with this. And the outrage has more to do with trying to score political points and advantage for the presidential election than anything else.
We're talking with Ed Terzansky, professor of political science at LaSalle University, a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, talking about the story of these destroyed tapes by the CIA, the tapes showing the interrogation and waterboarding of terror suspects. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions on this story for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon after 1 o'clock, it's Talk of the Nation. And the political junkie, Ken Rudin, will join host Neil Conan for a giant-sized political junkie, talking about the latest from the presidential campaign trail, among other things, after one on Talk of the Nation. We're talking about this story about the CIA destroying tapes of the interrogation of terror suspects using the controversial waterboarding technique, and talking about the CIA director today facing some questioning before the House Intelligence Committee over this whole matter, and talking with our guest, trying to put this into perspective and welcoming your questions and comments for him. Ed Terzansky, our guest, professor of political science at LaSalle University. And our first caller is John in Delafield. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Yep, good morning. I agree fully with Mr. Terzansky. Hope I pronounced your name correctly. I like the term mock outrage that's being expressed for political points. It's obvious, my comment, I guess, is it's obvious Congress was adequately briefed, gave approval, indeed encouragement. And I think it's unfortunate that these things are turned into political canards. It's roughly analogous to some of the videotape from Abu Ghraib, which showed some abuses, but then after the fact has turned into something ridiculous for political points. I think with the last example I gave, the New York Times ran a page one story 32 out of 36 days after that story broke. So again, I think it's unfortunate. I think, Joy, your guest has pegged it exactly for what it is. And I'll give John McCain a pass for his objection simply because of what he went through in service to his country. Thanks for taking my call. I'll listen to the reaction off the air.
Yeah, thanks, John. You were close. It's Ed Terzansky.
Well, I appreciate John's point of view in that it's pretty much a summation of mine, so I think we're on the same page. And as for John McCain, I want to make very clear that I think people of goodwill can have exchanges that are characterized by candor, intellect, and goodwill, and they don't have to agree with one another in all cases. It doesn't mean we're bad people. It just means we have a different point of view. And on this issue, again, I have the deepest respect for Senator McCain in terms of what he went through as prisoner of war. He shows more courage tying his shoes in the morning than some people do in a lifetime. Because of that, he happens to be dead wrong on this issue, because the goal here is to stop attacks, and if the only way to do it is to waterboard these guys, then by goodness, let's do it. And I would say to anyone who's opposed to it, here's the question. If your loved ones are at risk, I don't mean someone else's loved ones, I mean the people you most love in life. And if I know that I've got the guy who planned the attack, he knows time, place, method of attack, all of those things that can save your loved ones, do you want me to waterboard him, yes or no? If I can get the information, stop the attack, and save your loved ones by waterboarding, do you want me to do it, yes or no? I have yet to meet the person who sincerely says, no, by all means, let my loved ones die. Yeah. So there you have it.
Yeah, John McCain told Fox News Sunday, the destruction of the tapes again harms the credibility and the moral standing of America in the world.
And with all respect, I think that's a naive point of view, especially in the Middle East, because in the Middle East, people recognize that strength wins the day. And if the other side knows, and I'll paraphrase Winston Churchill, who was told about Nazi atrocities, and he said, they want to play rough, we can play rough too, which was his way of communicating that the British would fight for complete victory, that we would not restrain ourselves against an adversary that had shown no restraint. So we can have the gentle debate about moral standards after the fact. The most important thing is to prevent attacks that are going to take the lives of innocent Americans.
Yeah. Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Boy, I'll tell you, this 24 mentality is just destroying rational thinking and reasoning skills. Okay, and we need to think about reasoning skills, and to put ourselves in a position where we are projecting ourselves as moral, the moral riding high country, and saying, by God, if your loved one is going to die, and we need to waterboard this guy, wouldn't you do it? That is absolutely ridiculous, and I'm really offended.
No, Dave, don't be offended.
Hold on, let me finish my thought.
Yeah.
Well, really,
you're repeating yourself, Dave. Here's the point. I'm going to put the question to you.
Hold on, Dave.
It's your loved one, and it's my belief. I'm the intelligence service. It's my belief that I've got the person, and if I don't get the information out of them, your loved ones are going to die. Now, just for the sake of argumentation, answer the question. Do you want me to waterboard that guy or not?
Well, this is the way I would look at it. Being a Catholic, being a Christian, being a Democrat, and I've struggled with this. I'm a single parent of two daughters, minor kids, And I've already gone through this, seeing a lot of the tragedies that have happened in our country with what has happened to children. And I see people's reaction as to capital punishment. We want to get this guy and we want to kill this guy. He did this to my children.
Dave, you're confusing the issue.
I've struggled with
yes
this,
no
and,
question.
I think that if something like that would happen to my child and they would catch the guy, would I want that guy to die? And I would have
I'm not
to,
asking that question, Dave.
Well,
I'm asking you, do you want me
I'm
to waterboard
the
guy's
analogy.
Face?
Yeah,
no,
I would,
trying,
I would not.
But stick to it.
I
the answer is no? Well,
the
then,
answer is no. I would have to, I'd have to think more of my country than myself.
Yeah,
well,
Dave,
then I'm going to tell you this. Here's the good news. You don't have to worry about that, because if I were in the position, I would save your child. I would do it. And it's not just because it's your child. It's because it would be anyone's child, because
well,
we're fighting an adversary that has absolutely no self-restraint, that has announced that they're going to violate the prime rule of warfare, that they're going to target non-combatants. That is their primary purpose. And for that reason, as I said before in reference to the Geneva Conventions, they have changed the rules. So we have a very clear, and what makes this so dangerous, Dave, is because they are becoming more and more lethal in terms of the means that they have at their disposal to effect attacks. So you can talk about capital punishment and morality and whatever else you want, but with all due respect, you've got to stick to the question, and the question is, if we can get the information, as we did with these guys, that prevented attacks that would have taken the lives of innocents.
Yeah.
Do we waterboard or not?
What we hear, Professor Trzanski, though, is that we don't get the information we need when we do harsh techniques like this.
That is simply not true.
Well, that somebody will tell you what you want to hear just to stop the torture.
No, because what we get is objectively verifiable. We're not asking for a confession. In the old Soviet Union, they used to torture people into mock confessions because they wanted to incarcerate them. What we want here is to prevent attacks, and the information we have gotten has helped us disrupt attacks. That is not being disputed by anyone in Congress. No one in Congress is saying that we haven't disrupted attacks. It's just, as I said, retrospectively, now that we're in a different environment politically, all of a sudden people have become outraged, because what they knew before that was convenient and worked is now politically advantageous in another way. So, again, with all due respect to Dave, if he doesn't want to do it to save his own, I will. He doesn't have to worry about it.
Democratic Senator Joe Biden, we talked about him before, calling for the Attorney General to appoint a special counsel to investigate the CIA's destruction of these videotaped interrogations. Biden says Michael Mukasey is the same guy who refused to classify waterboarding as torture, and he says the matter of the CIA tapes would be better handled outside of the political realm.
I do not see where a special counsel operates outside the political realm. In fact, I think they're unaccountable. They wind up going on fishing expeditions. They very often, as was with the case of Scooter Libby, there was no underlying crime committed, and they trip him up on a perjury charge that is questionable at best. And here's my question. Do we really want to take our intelligence operatives, the people who are the tip of our sword, in going after the terrorists who want to kill us? Do we really want to take them and put them in a position where we pull them out of the field, now they have to lawyer up, and we've got an independent counsel going on? And by the way, here's the really sad news, Joy. People on the operations end of the agency have been advised in recent years to go out and buy operations insurance for themselves, just in the event they are brought in because of principally this kind of scenario, where you either have a special counsel or the ACLU is representing detainees, and you have either a chance of a criminal prosecution or a civil prosecution. Are we going to litigate our way through the war against terrorists, or are we going to fight to win? Now, people don't like to hear the question cast that way, but in reality, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Dave, are you still there? I want you to ask your make your initial point rather.
Great, great, thank you. You know, Mukasey wouldn't answer about waterboarding. He hadn't been briefed. Well, now he has been, and I think we should drag his butt up in front of the commission and now ask him. And if he says waterboarding is not torture, then a special prosecutor should be brought in.
Professor?
I disagree.
Why was he so reluctant to say yes or no that this is torture?
Because first of all, we did not define exactly what kind of waterboarding was used, and also he said he was not interested in going into a retrospective discussion, going back into the past and discussing things, because generally, and lawyers will tell you this, they don't want to get into speculative discussions. And that would have been the most speculative kind of discussion.
I guess I don't understand why he wouldn't say that this harsh interrogation technique is not torture and it will, you know, help us stop terrorism.
Well, it's certain. Let's put it this way. Waterboarding is certainly terrifying. Does that classify it as torture? I think torture falls into the area of pornography. I'm not sure that I can define it in every aspect. In certain aspects, you can. I mean, something. John McCain was tortured because he can't lift his arms above shoulder level, and it left a lasting effect, physical or physiological, but not all forms of torture do that. So I think there is a problem in basic definitions. And I also I don't think Mukasey wanted to be drawn into the thicket of that issue because as hard as it is to believe, politics gets mixed up, not just in national security issues, but also in things like confirmations of attorneys general.
Yeah, I imagine that. Ray in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Thanks, Joy, for bringing me in here. First off, if they had saved the tapes, and as Daniel Shore said over the weekends, just blacked out the faces of the interrogators, at least we could see what this interrogated man had said afterwards, because right now all we have is the CIA's word for it. They could have got that information from other sources to prevent those attacks. Secondly, I would like your guest to answer this question. Would he torture a child to save Americans' lives? Yes or no?
No, Ray, and it's a silly question because a child would not be in a position to have the kind of information that would help me save Americans' lives. So all analogies limp, but yours needs a wheelchair. There's no comparison there. And as for why not reveal everything, because, and this has been established firmly in American law and an understanding of American intelligence operations going back to George Washington, the public is not entitled to know everything, because you may wind up revealing sources and methods of information that we need to preserve for other aspects of an intelligence capability. And as for us taking the word of the CIA, well, yes, but keep in mind that the CIA has been briefing Congress. As I said at the outset, Congress was briefed a minimum of 30 times about these interrogations. And we've pointed to two members of Congress. Members of Congress have been told about operations that have been disrupted. Now, you can take the position that the CIA is just lying to cover itself. I would suggest to you that the agency, and more importantly, the people who are on the front lines, are not sadistic torturers who are interested in pulling innocent people off the street and subjecting them to horrible treatment just for kicks and giggles. This is deadly serious business, And if you don't believe the threat's real, then by all means, pull up the analogies and say, what if we had a child here? But I will tell you that, that's not a serious question, given the context in which we find ourselves, with all due respect.
An email from Chet in Athens wants to know why, if torture is such an effective interrogation technique, well, let's say if waterboarding is such an effective interrogation technique, why were there attacks in Spain and England after our use of it?
He's
saying there are terrorist attacks in Spain and England and elsewhere. How come we weren't able to prevent those attacks?
Well, because the people we caught may not have been involved in planning those attacks. Here's the response to Chet. How many successful terrorist attacks have there been in the United States since 9/11? So if you have to be able to flip the question.
And that former CIA agent, this John Kirkou, is saying that the information derived from at least one of those suspects did indeed prevent, I thought he said dozens of potential attacks.
Right.
Yeah. We are talking with Ed Terzansky, professor of political science at LaSalle University, senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, talking about the destroyed CIA tapes that showed the interrogation, including the waterboarding of terror suspects, talking about CIA Director Hayden on Capitol Hill today and yesterday, answering questions from senators and U.S. representatives about this matter, and talking about where we go from here, and wondering what you think, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you, talking with a woman who survived the genocide in Rwanda and has dedicated her life to helping genocide victims throughout the world. And then after 10, Kathleen and her guest will discuss Canada's healthcare system. We're talking about the CIA tapes and welcoming your thoughts and questions on this for our guest. Laura in New Berlin is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just had a point of clarification. When I heard the New York Times writer interviewed this week, Monday, on Talk of the Nation, I thought he identified the two videotaped subjects as Abu Zubaydah, and then the second one, I thought he said the name was something like Narishi, and I thought the claim was that this Abu Zubaydah supposedly provided the information that allowed the capture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So that is my question. And then for the record, I don't believe torture, including waterboarding, should ever, under any circumstance in the cosmos, be used. Thank you.
Laura, stay with us, please, because I want to put the question to you directly. First, I want to answer what you said. The information from Abu Zubaydah did lead to the apprehension of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, although Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was also waterboarded, and he was the second individual identified as having been videotaped. The third was not named, to my knowledge. But you say never, ever, under any circumstance. So if we find out that there is a nuclear warhead from the old Soviet stockpile that somehow is making its way into an American port and is going to wind up docking in Chicago, and it can kill 2 million people, you say never, ever, ever use any kind of torture to get the information that could disrupt that plot.
Yeah, she said no reason in the cosmos.
I regret that she hung up, because I think there's a reason she hung up, too, because people do not like to answer the specific. It's fine to deal with the hypothetical, But when you make it real, when you start adding a level of detail where, in effect, you have to look around and start counting your dead, and they're not going to be someone else's dead, they're going to be your dead, people do generally get a change in their convictions.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. Derek in Round Lake, hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I have a very interesting opinion about this issue here, which is, I think, more about us than anybody else as a country. The example from history I like to give was back in late 1932.
We can't do a real long history lesson
okay,
here, Derek.
What I like to say is that back in 1933, Mr. Markov, who was a Bulgarian communist, he was put on trial by Nazis in Germany, which actually resulted in a clampdown of the religious and political freedom, basically on the term of fighting communist terrorism. What has happened was we have a very similar situation analogic to our times, where we have to specifically look at ourselves and realize, are we are going to fight terrorism by the means of democratic country, or are we going to fight terrorism by the means of totalitarianism? And what needs to be asked, our foreign policy issues and policies are simply perpetuating in regards of terrorism, the current situation, or we are going to look ourselves honestly in the face, say, what kind of country are we, what kind of values do we have, and basically go with that.
Yeah, and how are you going to answer the specific question that our guest will pose to you, that if this waterboarding would get information that would save the city of Chicago, is it okay or not?
In a democratic system, there are some amount of risk, there's some amount of the lost you must take to stand up to your values. Otherwise, simply, we have no regard to our own existence, because if we treat our degree of our liberties to our...
Yeah, we'd be as bad as our enemies, Ed Terzansky, if we resorted to torture.
Well, if we resorted to it as a first resort, the answer would be yes. But in an extreme situation, as I've described, then keep this in mind. The government exists to do those things that we cannot do for ourselves, and its first responsibility is to protect us. And in an extreme situation, as I've described, for the government not to do that, it would be a serious abrogation of its responsibilities. And your listeners in the Midwest will probably know the name Richard Posner. He's a federal judge who has written very thoughtfully on this subject, wrote a book called The Constitution is Not a Suicide Pact. And he has explained how constitutionally extreme means can be used in dire national emergencies, as they have been throughout our entire history. Look at what Lincoln did to save the Union. Now, he suspended habeas corpus. Should he not have done that to save the Union? And we can. Here's the good news. We've got, as long as the Republic lasts, to discuss the point, because he saved the Republic. And what we're talking about is saving lives today. And again, with all due respect, I tell people, if you want to have this discussion, then you have to make it real. We have to talk about the very real consequences of inaction. And if you honestly consider those and still say, no, never, not ever, then I say two things. One, it's good that you're not in charge of our national security. And second, people of goodwill can have a difference of opinion. We have a difference of opinion.
And the way this worked, according to this former CIA agent who's making the media rounds, is that this wasn't done to every single suspect.
No.
It was done on a case-by-case basis.
To our knowledge, it's been done three times. Now, it may have been done more than that, but it's been done three times, and I've already made the point that our interrogators do not do this for kicks and giggles. This is not out-of-control thugs misbehaving at Abu Ghraib. These are very serious, purposeful people who, when they exhaust all rational means, all polite means, all of those means that we don't have any problems with, and they still don't have the answers they need, resort to the last weapon they have, which usually gets the information. Anyone who says torture doesn't work doesn't know very much about interrogations.
Yeah, and it was also said that each time, each individual time it was used, or another harsh interrogation method, that specific permission was sought from the White House.
I don't doubt that. And I don't doubt that the president said, go ahead and do it. And I do not blame the president for not becoming involved in a detailed discussion of this, because I think the overwhelming majority of the American public, although they will say they do not like torture, when you put the question into very real terms, they say, absolutely do what you have to. Joy, remember all those soccer mommies during the Clinton years?
Yep.
After 9/11, they became security mommies. And they said, you do what you have to, but you save my babies. And this is not an isolated threat we're talking about. This is not something that's going away. This is very real. They keep on coming after us. They have to get it right once. We have to get counterterrorism right every single time. So Al-Qaeda can try 1,000 times. If they only succeed once, you have 9/11.
Yeah. Is it, Professor Trusansky, though, maybe in 2002, right off the 9/11 terrorist attacks, that there might have been more of fear then and now with more time to think about it, and now it's 2007, and do we really need to be pouring water down the throats of these guys to get
it? Well, no one's saying that we're doing it now. No one's saying we're doing it in every case. Our discussion has been about 2002,
right.
And it's correct to say that the passion of the times may have driven this a bit, but also information in the system about the operational capabilities of Al-Qaeda may have driven this. And if as this former CIA agent says, we disrupted dozens of attacks, and that is the case, then I think opponents of waterboarding should consider that first and foremost. If indeed waterboarding three individuals led to the disruption of dozens of cases, dozens of attacks that may have cost tens of thousands of lives, was it worth it? Yes or no? That's the question.
Let me bring Ken in Oshkosh on the air. Hi, Ken.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I cannot believe what I'm hearing. The gentleman is abrogating philosophy, ethics, and morals going back to the time of Augustine and Aquinas. Plus, I would like him to answer the question the gentleman asked before about torturing a child, because I had buddies in Nam who tortured and off children exactly because they had information. Thirdly, as far as successful attacks, geez.
Excuse me, did you turn those people in?
Who is responsible for the anthrax attack?
Excuse me, did you turn those people in?
Hey, don't beg the question.
I'm not begging the question.
Who's responsible for the anthrax attacks?
What? I'm sorry, Ken.
Who did the anthrax attacks? That was a successful attack on our very congressman.
Yeah, all right. He wants to, I don't want to go into child torture, for a big debate over whether you torture
a
child or not.
No, but this is what happens, sure. You get individuals who come in and toss a hand grenade in the room and say, I know guys who tortured children in Vietnam. And I want to know, if you knew that, did you turn those people in? Because I don't think it happened.
Yeah.
And typically what happens, you get someone in, first thing they do is they insult your morals. And by the way, I'm a devout Roman Catholic. I know the writings of Augustine and Aquinas, and I would gladly engage in a goodwill discussion with someone on that. But when they start talking about American troops having committed atrocities, and it's just like American troops at Haditha who were accused of committing atrocities, you investigate the matter and you find out that it was a fraud. Never happened. The desecration of the Quran at Gitmo, you have the investigation, you find out happened. No, it didn't. So this is a tactic that just doesn't fly, and quite frankly, I don't think anyone should sit by and allow people to come in and impugn the honor of American fighting men the way that individual just did.
Yeah. Want to comment whether the anthrax scare was an Al-Qaeda attack?
Don't know. Mm-hmm. Don't know, and that's something very serious, because we do know that Al-Qaeda is very patient and probes. In that particular case, they managed to kill a number of people, cause great disruption to the U.S. economy and to the way we do things. So it fits into an al-Qaeda pattern in that it's symbolic, it's systemic, although it didn't lead to a wholesale loss of life. And it's disconcerting that we don't have more information publicly available about that, although I'm sure the government has more that it's not sharing for prudential operational reasons.
Jake in Green Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. We're always told it's specific information when in reality it's a wide net. Examples of it are Gitmo, emails and phones being captured, and then when there is evidence, it's being destroyed. How do you respond to that?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Jake.
Well, we're always told it's specific information when in reality they take a lot more.
Well, sure they do, because keep in mind that in this particular case, the people intent on harming us are generally moving around within the society. You may have bumped into two or three people, as I may have, and you don't know who they are or what they're doing. And they're using, during the Cold War, the Soviets would have their own communication system. That's not the case during the War on Terror. They use cell phones. They go out and buy them by the boatload because they use them as one-time pads. They engage in credit card fraud and other forms of financial theft in order to sustain their operations. So they're embedded within us, which is why we have to use a very wide net. Now, we get pieces of information that help us sift through that mountain of what is collected so that we pull out the signals from among the noise. And that's why you can have machines, you can do all of the wide net intercepting you want, but unless you get good human intelligence, and in this particular case, and then again, very rare, but in these very rare cases where you have a high degree of confidence that the person in question has time, place, date, method of attack, the question is, do you engage in extreme forms of intimidation that are not normally used because of the stakes involved?
We'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Professor Terzansky, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Joy.
Ed Terzansky, professor of political science at LaSalle University, senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. We thank him for joining us. We thank Leo Duran for producing the hour and to Christina Taylor for on-air production. Tomorrow at this time, I'm going to be talking with someone who says she's an environmentalist who supports nuclear power. That's coming up tomorrow between 8 and 9. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.